Life of Jesus, a devotional study by Melva Purkis. A Life of Jesus, Book 4, Chapter 2, The Call of the Four. The first clear picture the Gospels give us of Jesus beside the Lake of Galilee is an earnest of what he was to experience during the months ahead. Luke tells us that as he approached the lake, the people pressed upon him to hear the word of God. Although they would have heard of the healing of the nobleman's son, it was not the prospect of seeing any display of power which brought them to him that was to follow. Rather, their national hopes were stirred by the things that they had heard concerning this rabbi who had sprung up in their midst and who had created such a storm in Jerusalem. They were anxious to hear him speak and to confirm from the prophets the hope which they hardly dared to entertain. Among the many fishermen whose boats lay heeled over on the beach were four who had been waiting with eager hearts for this moment. Three of them, Peter, Andrew, and John, we have met before. They had shared exciting experiences in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria with him. They had seen his works of power and enjoyed the wonderful privilege of listening to him as he spoke of his Father's kingdom. James was John's brother. They shared in the fishing undertaking which prospered under the management of their father Zebedee. There can be little doubt that in the long silent hours of the night, as their boat dipped in the inky waters, John had told his brother about Jesus. His glowing tribute and utter conviction had convinced James, and without the personal preparation which the other three had enjoyed, he was ready for discipleship. Peter and Andrew were casting their net when they became aware of an increasing commotion. Looking up from their work, they saw a vast concourse of people pressing round one who had already become dear to them. Jesus was back in their midst. It was a breathless moment for them. As they watched, they saw that he was making no attempt to satisfy the people's clamour. He was moving purposefully towards them. In a few minutes he stood facing them, and they were looking into his eyes. This was the moment for which they had longed and prayed. It was the moment for which his absence had prepared them. They had found during the past months that his nearness was essential for their happiness. There had been little satisfaction in their daily toil. They had been living on their memories and their hopes. Now those hopes were realized. He was standing here before them, reviving by his presence and his familiar features all the resolutions that their highest aspirations had conceived. But there was no time to lose in greetings. The crowd pressed hotly upon them, and they were in danger of being pushed into the water. Jesus had a purpose in seeking them out. "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." Without the slightest hesitation, Peter and Andrew dropped their nets on the sand and went with him. A little further along the shore, James and John were busy with their father Zebedee, and some of the servants washing and mending their nets. The two brothers lifted up their eyes to find Jesus regarding them intently. Again the senses of the Galilean fishermen thrilled as they heard words which were at once an invitation and a command. "Follow me." They responded immediately, leaving their father and their work to begin a life of no less hardship and more uncertainty. But because it would be a life in which they would remain in the company of Jesus, share his work and his thoughts, they were content. Looking at these four sturdy, sincere men, each different yet having in common the desire to follow him without counting the cost, Jesus was under no illusion about the difficulty of the task he had set himself. But because he had implicit faith in his Father's guidance, and recognized in these men his Father's gift to him, he was able to say confidently, "I will make you." Many weary months of misunderstanding and doubt lay between them and their complete transformation. But by love and understanding, sympathy and rebuke, their education was to be developed until the day when they were to continue his work in the earth, worthily reflecting the glory which shone forth from him. Even now their calling was not complete. It was, for three of them, the third stage in their spiritual relationship with their Lord. Now they were called to discipleship. Soon their vocation would be apostleship. Having fulfilled the purpose which had brought him to the lakeside, Jesus turned to the people who sought him and were eager to hear him. He chose Peter's boat, and having besought him to launch it and anchor a little from the shore, he sat down and taught the multitude. His discourse over, Jesus turned his attention once more to the men who had so eagerly obeyed his call. He was anxious to show them in a way which they would never forget that he had asked them to revoke their lower calling for a higher one. They were to be fishermen still, but their work was no longer to be limited to the waters of the lake and the darting silver forms which struggled in their nets. The whole world was to be their fishing ground, and the seething crowds now reluctantly dispersing on the shore were to be enclosed in their net. So the first great lesson of their discipleship began. Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a draught. Peter demurred. There was little any fisherman could teach him about these waters. He knew where the fish could be found. He knew the best season and time for a catch. He recognized its presence by the ripples and shadows on the water. His experience told him that there was no hope of a catch that morning. If any fish were to be caught, the only possible chance was during the night, and their boats had just returned empty from their night's fishing. Peter was willing to acknowledge the leadership of his new master in spiritual paths. But surely Jesus had nothing to teach him in his daily tasks. Ah, Peter, how wrong you are! How wrong is every disciple who fails to acknowledge Jesus as his master in every walk of life and every place of experience. Unless our surrender is complete, we shall toil all the night and catch nothing. Happily, Peter's doubts were redeemed by his obedience. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down the net. In the presence of Jesus and under his direction, the nets were lowered once more. It was immediately evident that a profound change had taken place, which confounded all Peter's natural skill and experience. The sea was boiling with fish, and as the nets were drawn in, they broke under the weight and strain. This was a lesson which Jesus intended for each of these men, and unconsciously Peter, in his excitement, brought the others into its influence. He called to James and John in the other ship to come and help them. Soon both ships were so laden with fish that they were in danger of sinking. Peter worked feverishly, his mind completely bewildered by the experience. He had seen Jesus perform miracles before, miracles that many would believe were far greater than this. But he had seen nothing that touched him so closely. He needed nothing more to convince him that he was in the presence of the Messiah. His first feelings were utter unworthiness and an overwhelming sense of sin. And because it was Peter, he expressed himself in hasty words. He fell down at Jesus' knees, crying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." But Jesus was not critical of his words. He rejoiced to see how well he had learned this first great lesson of discipleship, and how truly he had been affected by a penitence of spirit which groaned in the depths of its unworthiness. "Fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men." How imperfect an expression of his heart Peter's words were sown as soon as the boats reached the shore. Luke tells us that as soon as they brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Book 4, Chapter 3, A Sabbath in Capernaum. The Sabbath which followed the calling of the four from their lakeside task was a memorable one. It began in the synagogue at Capernaum, where Jesus was invited to speak to the people. The effect upon these eager, warm-hearted Galileans, removed from the disconcerting evidence of his lowly origin and human contacts, was profound. Even in Nazareth, the worshippers had forgotten their prejudice when he spoke to them. They were lost in wonder as they listened to the gracious words which he spoke. So it was in Capernaum. So it was to be throughout Galilee and Judea. To listen to Jesus must have been an experience which could never be forgotten. He spoke with an authority which contrasted unmistakably with that of the scribes. There was a power in his utterance which was denied the most learned scribe. There it was a conviction that made all the teaching which they had heard before pale and lifeless. There was more even than this. The strong, radiant character of Jesus shone forth in his teaching. As with his works, so with his words. Jesus gave himself, and those that heard and saw felt something that was utterly beautiful and holy. He spoke to them of the love of God and the glory of his kingdom, and told them of the demands it made of all those who responded to his call. As his hearers listened, they must have been elevated far above the constricted limits of their narrow lives. They must have had visions of a beauty and a purpose they had never dreamed of. They must have seen something of the men and women it was possible for them to become. And the vision was given reality as they looked up at the face of one whose life was uncompromisingly dedicated to God. The evangelist conveys all this in his simple words. He spake in their synagogue, being glorified of all. The service was suddenly interrupted by the cry of a demented man. The words of grace had been too much for his tortured spirit. His voice rang through the building, "Let us alone! What are we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God." A deathly silence followed.